is a welcome card in the chair pocket in front of you. You can take a moment and fill that out. Again, with any prayer requests you have.
Oh, okay. I am sorry. Today's not one of the days I'm going to go long, barring the Spirit coming and changing my notes, which could happen. I heard someone say once that, like, when you're speaking, like, 15 minutes of boring is 14 minutes too long. And I took that to heart when he said it, and I hope that I can be someone who, even the days when I go a little longer, I'm doing so in such a way that there's passion and excitement, because these are things that I genuinely am passionate and excited about. Particularly this series we're in right now, we're considering Advent, the arrival of Jesus. We're looking at John chapter 1 and doing so, and then we're kind of going back to the significance of invitation as we do that. And we've defined invitation. I mean, it could be defined other ways, but we've been saying it this way, that what invitation does is it puts the power in somebody else's hands to move at the speed that they're comfortable with, right? And so we want to recognize Christmas is one of these seasons, right? It's one of these seasons where people are more prone to be willing to just be a part of your church fellowship, to meet your church family. And so let's utilize this as a means to invite people to get to know us, and in hopes that as well they'll come to know Jesus. I got a couple stories I'm going to share throughout this morning that kind of tell this story. And the first one is this. I want you to recognize that the no's are okay. There's going to be seasons where you invite someone and you'll get a no, and that is okay. For example, I mentioned this to this service actually really briefly as we were doing the interview with Eric Corley, but there's a friend I want to tell you a little bit more about who I've invited to services and to be a part of my church family for 15 years while I was in Lloydminster. 15 years I invited him. I want to tell you a little bit more about him. I have referenced him before, but the story kind of has continued to unfold in the recent weeks, if you will. And with his permission, he said, please, like, you're allowed to tell my story. If it helps anybody, then it's worth it. So my friend that I'm speaking of is one who I would call a hard-nosed atheist, all right? Now, I have told you that rarely do I enter into an argument when trying to share my faith, because I really feel that for the most part, people don't lose an argument and then come to faith. That's just not the way things work. So rarely do I enter into an argument. However, with this particular friend, because of his personality and because of mine and because there's this mutual respect, we have had discussions where our voices are raised a little, okay? And it was never, we were actually in a restaurant once, and the waitress came over and was like, are you guys okay? I'm like, oh yeah, don't worry, let's hug. And we hugged, and it was all good. You know, so we have had those types of discussions because we are both passionate people. And it could get a little bit heightened, but there was always mutual respect, and that was really important to this relationship, and it was a place I knew I could take them. But he was what I would call a hard-nosed atheist, and there's a reason to it. There's a bit of a backstory, and I'm going to tell you the backstory. He was raised in a family where his dad was one who I would say was obsessed. And I don't mean that in a good way. He was obsessed with the end times or the apocalypse or the end of the world, whatever phrase you might put in there. So much so that he left the big city, a great job, to move his family to northern Saskatchewan in the middle of nowhere so that he could get completely off grid. So that when the end was to come, he and his family would be able to survive as best as possible. This went to the extremes of they had bunkers built and their off-grid home in northern Saskatchewan, where he would take his kids out and teach them how to shoot so that when people would come, they could defend themselves. So he was teaching his kids that this day was going to come and they were going to have to sit in these bunker and hold fort and fire at other people. This is what he was kind of ingraining into his family. He, in the midst of this move, of this season of life, there was no local church that was pure enough for them to gather together. And so rather than being a part of a messy local church, which we are, by the way, rather than being part of a messy local church, he would take his family and lock them in the basement on Sundays, and he would read to them for hours upon hours from the old King James, and he would preach to his kids for hours upon hours with just the five of them, okay? This was the way in which he was raised. Into his teen years, it became not obsessive with the end times, but it became not only emotionally but physically abusive within his family. And so his mom was in this season where they were preparing to kind of exit, leave with the kids. At this season, he remembers that his dad would, in the evening, sleep downstairs and stoke the fire. And as a young teen, he thought this was because he was trying to just keep the family warm and just warm through the night, right? So prior to them leaving, his last memories of his father was him sleeping on the couch, stoking the fire, and they hasn't talked to him since. He has no desire to ever communicate with his father. And in the process, he swore to himself, I will never be like my dad. I will never become him, which led him into being a hard-nosed atheist. So this is the background. Over the course of friendship, which started about 15 years ago, it started because of fantasy football, of all things. So there you go. If you're a man, I know it's not just a guy. I think some girls are into fantasy football, playing at fantasy football. It can be redeemed for good things, okay? There you go. Sports can be redeemed for good. Our friendship started with fantasy football. We got to know one another, and we were passionate about that first, which led into other conversations. But over the course of this, he would come into crisis, and I've shared this part. In the midst of his crisis of life, he would sometimes show up at my office, not during like Sunday morning, but show up at my office and begin to process what he was working on, which is something I always thought was odd for a hard-nosed atheist to come to a church to meet with his pastor friend to talk about his issues. But nonetheless, that is what he did. Recently, he's hit this place where he feels like he's at rock bottom. A few weeks ago, he was sleeping on the couch in the downstairs of his house, looking at the fireplace. And he began to weep and weep and weep. And he said, in an effort to not become my father, I have become exactly who he is, just on the other end of the spectrum. In his brokenness, somehow he stumbles across Andy Stanley marriage small group material. I know. So he starts watching it. To which he's like, well, there must be more Andy Stanley material out there. And so he started listening to this podcast series on Is the Bible Real? By Andy Stanley. To which I received the text, hey, could you listen to this? I want to talk about it. Sure. Of course I'll do that. We initiated that conversation and it started like this. You need to know, Ken, I'm not converting to Christianity. I was like, no problem, man. That's okay. Like, I'm not going to force this with you. I've tried that. It didn't work. I'm not converting, but I've tried everything. I've done everything to try and get my life right, to get my family right, to get my home right, and nothing has worked. The only thing I haven't done is tried to do this with God. So maybe I need to try. Without sharing the ugly parts of the details, the cool part of the story is about a month ago, he started taking his kids to church. And then a couple weeks ago, his wife went with him. this is nothing that is sorted out and figured out in its completion. And he is not yet at that place where he has put his faith in Jesus. But for 15 years, I invited him to gather church family. 15! To which I got hard nose the whole time. And now that I live in Fort Saskatchewan, he's taking his family to church. I mean, this to you might sound like, okay, cool story. But for me, this is unbelievable. Like, this is a miracle. And I am so ecstatic. I'm okay with the fact that I'm not even there to witness it. I recognize stepping back in this place that it was my job for 15 years to till the soil. That was my job. I was just the tiller of the soil. I had to go in and pick rocks and pile them on the side. That was my role in this. And for 15 years, I got nose, and now he's at the place where he's just considering maybe God. So if you are in a relationship with someone, friend, loved one, maybe even a son or a daughter, and you feel like all I've gotten is nose, you know, it's okay. God is faithful. He's good. He's going to move and he's going to work. And sometimes our role has been simply to till the soil, and something down the road will come. So don't be discouraged when you get the no's, because invitation is powerful. It puts the power into someone else's hands, then allows them to move at the speed that they want to. And it's our role in that to just be obedient, to be faithful. We are not the ones who are called to convict of sin. We are not the ones who are called to lead and guide the steps in the path, right? We're faithful and obedient. It's God who does all that. And that brings us to this season that we refer to as Advent. Because it's God that does the convicting and the leading and the guiding, with absolute certainty made sure that there was a way in which for us to be led, to be guided, to be convicted of our sin. And he's coming. Through Jesus coming and being God in human flesh amongst us so that sin could eventually be paid for, redeemed, so that evil could be paid for, redeemed, so that wickedness could be paid for and redeemed. That's inclusive of mine and of your sin, evil, and wickedness. And this Advent season reminds us that this has started, and our text this Advent brings us to this reality as well. We're going to go there. It's John chapter 1. And 9 to 13 is our text today. And if you are using those pew Bibles and you don't have your own, we just invite you to pull out and do that. Please, please follow us. We're on page 886. The smaller Bibles, if you're using the large one, it's 1,126. We'd love for you to read with us. No pressure to do so. So let me read this text one time. I'm going to move into this a bit further. It says this: the true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. We know that this has been established already from the past weeks. The he is Jesus. Jesus was coming into the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. This is really interesting because this passage has set it up for us right at the very beginning. In the beginning was the Word, or in the beginning was Jesus. Jesus was with God. Jesus was God. And all things were created through Jesus. And here, once again, this reality is established that Jesus is God and that he is Creator God and he has come into the world. And there's a massive irony that exists here. Jesus, the one who has come into the world, the one in which the world has been made, is now there with them, but they did not know him. Now, I want us to think of this as though we were alive then, because this is really, really important for us, okay? It's easy to miss this in 2019, right? Because Jesus for us, in many ways, is this perhaps distant or this historical person who walked the earth 2,000 years ago, right? But for the original audience of John, for the people who would first read this, Jesus was a contemporary, right? The people who would have read this or would have heard this, at the very least, would have heard of Jesus. At the very least, would have, you know, heard testimony of his miracle. But in many cases, a lot of them would have personally saw Jesus. They would have known who Jesus was, because he was literally a historical person that walked this earth, that was alive and that was well, and that they encountered. So they knew Jesus, but they did not know him. So when Scripture is telling us that they did not know him, it's meaning so much more than just a knowing of. It's talking about a relational or an intimate relationship, okay? They did not know him, meaning they did not have relationship or intimacy with Jesus. It's important for us to get that. I'll give you a more modern example. All of you know now at this point of Janelle, right? You know of her, but you do not know Janelle like I know Janelle, right? I mean, that girl is something else. Now, she has these Mennonite roots that are somewhat passive and yet sneakily aggressive, if you will. She can't help it. She was born that way. And I know this about her. I have experienced this with her. I'll give you an example. Anyone know what Dutch Blitz is? It's like, I think it's even a Mennonite game. Is it? Legit? Is it? Yeah? My girl who comes across is this super sweet, super like gentle and caring woman. When she plays Dutch Blitz, she's a killer. I'm telling you, if you play the red 2 and she's got the red 3, you better move your hand fast. Because if you don't, with every fiber in her being, she is slapping that card down as hard as she can so she can move to the next one, because that is how she plays Dutch Blitz. You know the coach now when you get to know Janelle. She's not at the first service. I cheat when I play Dutch Blitz. I only do it to keep it competitive, okay? Because it wouldn't be fun for her if she always won. So I rarely, almost never put 10 cards in the 10 card pile, because I just don't stand a chance. So to help her, like, get her competitive ways out, I usually put like 8 and sometimes 7 if I'm doing really poorly. Anyways, you get to know someone within relationship with them, as you live with them, is my point. A side note that actually does apply, though, that I think is interesting as well. In Scripture, there are even places, an example, where they use the word know to refer to sexual intimacy between a husband and a wife. Okay, so like when we're talking about know, they did not know him. It doesn't mean they didn't know him, like they didn't know if he existed. They knew he existed. They lived with him. They were contemporaries. What it's referring to is they did not know, have relationship with him. And this is what is so important for us here today in 2019. And so the text continues. Verses 12 and 13 now. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. This is so important. For every single one of us here, this is important. No matter where you were at in your journey of faith and trying to figure out Jesus and all these things, this is important for every single one of us. Firstly, because for all who believe in him, he gave the right to become children of God. Now let me say this before I get into this. Believing, or faith, as A.W. Tozer would put it, is not a destination. It's a journey. I really believe that. Now I want to preface it. I do understand that our faith, our believing in Jesus, brings us into this place where positionally God looks at us and now sees us as his, okay? That is something that happens. It's miraculous. It's a miracle. We sang of it. I came out of the grave, all right? He brings that which is dead alive. There's something positionally that happens when we put our faith or when we believe in Jesus, okay? But it's not just the destination. It's not. It's a journey. It's something we grow in. It's something we begin to understand more and more. And this is important for all of us. First, this is important for those of us who have never done that. And here's why. It goes back to what this passage is always referenced to, already made reference to, that all things were created through him. Jesus, as the creator, did so in such a fashion that this earth and all of its inhabitants and everything that was happening was perfect. It was exactly as he willed, exactly as he planned. It was perfect. It didn't stay that way, and it wasn't God's fault. He gave us freedoms. And in the midst of those freedoms, sin, evil, wickedness came into the picture. And this sin, this evil, this wickedness that came into the picture shifted everything. See, previously, we were able to walk perfectly with God, and the sin, the evil, the wickedness broke that relationship. It messed with it. And God did not want that to be the case. He wanted to ensure that that sin, that evil, that wickedness could be paid for, could be dealt with, could be redeemed, if you will. And so that's why Jesus came. He came on this mission to ensure that he could restore what was originally planned, that we as humanity would once again be able to walk with God, to experience freedom, to experience forgiveness, to experience healing. He did that so we could walk with God. We could journey with God. And this happens through us believing. And so you've heard me say this week after week, but it's so important. This starts the journey, if you will, by coming to him and saying, Jesus, I'm sorry. Jesus, please forgive me. Now, Jesus, my life is yours. Because at the cross, Jesus took on your sin, your evil, your wickedness, and ensured that it could be freed, forgiven, set free. This journey simply starts by in your own heart saying, Jesus, I'm sorry. Jesus, forgive me. Jesus, my life is yours. It's a powerful moment when that happens. Because a journey with God has been brought back to what was planned by him. Now, this doesn't mean we're going to never struggle again. Trust me. Everyone who knows what I've just said and experienced it knows they're going to still struggle. But nonetheless, there's forgiveness and freedom that is available through him. And I want you to know that. But I said already that I believe this is for every one of us. And some of us who are sitting here have heard some form of what I've just shared hundreds, maybe even thousands of times. And sometimes we step back and we think, okay, he's now sharing for the other people here, not me. That is never the case. The good news of what Jesus has done is for every single one of us, day in, day out. That's why we say, my life is yours, because it's this journey we enter into, and God moves us to becoming more and more like Jesus. God moves us to becoming more and more concerned with his mission and his kingdom, and it's a beautiful thing that happens, and this passage actually convinces me of this even more. And you want to know why? Because it says this, To all who believe in him, he gave the right to become children of God. Check this out. This is really important. In both English and for my scholarly brothers and sisters, the Greek, believe is a verb. Believe is a verb. It's an action word. Think about that, the significance of that. Believe is a verb. It's an action word. It is not a noun, a place, faith, believing. It's not a destination. It's a journey. It's something we go on. We walk with God, right? It's a journey. In my own personal devotional light as I take time to just think on God, reflect on God. I'm reading two different books to help me in this right now. And one of them is called Fiery Faith. And I want to read a portion of what I read this very week. It's called Fiery Faith, and it's excerpts of writings from A.W. Tozer, who I think was, if not was, early on, one of the people who made it well known, that statement that says, where we say faith is not a destination but a journey. And here's something that he says that I think is important for us to understand, that but to believe or is a verb, all right? It's an action word. He writes this: conversion for those first Christians was not a destination. It was the beginning of a journey. And right there is where the biblical emphasis differs from ours. Today, all is made too dependent upon the initial act of believing. At a given moment, a decision is made for Christ, and after that, everything is automatic. This is not taught in so many words, but such is the impression inadvertently created by our failure to lay a spiritual emphasis in our evangelistic preaching. We of the evangelical churches are almost all guilty of this lopsided view of the Christian life. And because the foundations are out of plumb, the temple of God leans dangerously and threatens to topple unless some immediate corrections are made. In our eagerness to make converts, we allow our hearers to absorb the idea that they can deal with their entire responsibility once and for all by an act of believing. This is in some vague way supposed to honor grace and glorify God, whereas actually it makes Christ the author of some grotesque, unworkable system that has no counterpart in the scriptures of truth. In the book of Acts, faith was for each believer a beginning, not an end. Believing was not once and done act. It was more than an act. It was an attitude of the heart and mind. And it inspired and enabled the believer to take up his cross and follow the Lamb wherever he went. I share this not to bring guilt or shame or even worry. Not at all. I share this because I think it's important for us to be spurred on to love, to good deeds. Now, please don't mistake me. Jesus wants to restore this walk with God. And when we walk with him, when we get to know Jesus, it's not about doing more. It's not about being more. It's about knowing Jesus better. And when we get to know the beauty and just the significance of his love, it just begins to naturally overflow within us. But this takes time and is that journey that we are all to be on. I know this because believing is a verb. It's an action word. And so this is going to be worked out in each of our lives in some different ways. Sometimes we refer to this as the producing of fruit, if you will. Like my friend back in Lloydminster, I didn't produce any fruit. I was the tiller of the soil. Now I'm hoping someone else will produce some fruit in that relationship. But fruit can look like all sorts of different things. And I get that. I'm okay with that. For us, though, in this season of Advent, we're reminded that Jesus came to ensure that we could walk with God, to know him intimately, and to believe in his name. I'm asking us to consider invitation. Invitation as a means to walk more and more with Jesus, to look more and more like him, to embrace what it means to understand that to believe is a verb, an action word. You don't have to do this. In a sense, I'm inviting you to invite, if you will. But it's one way that we can begin to live out what it means to know Jesus, to live out what it means to believe in him. I have another story I want to share with you. This story kind of comes on the heels of last week. And I would have loved to invite Shirley up front to do this in person. But she and Darcy are away for his big 6-0 party. I don't know if I'm supposed to tell you that, but that's what they're doing. Nonetheless, we were exchanging some emails, and she shared this with me, and she gave me permission to read it to you. And I want to conclude with this to spur us on. I'd like to tell you that as you were talking with Coralie and Eric this past Sunday, I thought about the invitation I got some 20 plus years ago. Tiffany Bergman was the one who gave me the invitation. She was a high school student. I want to pause there. No, this is important. Sometimes when we gather like this, for those of you who are students right now, you might feel like, well, I'm not into the place where I'm prepared or equipped or ready to serve in the kingdom. I just want you to know that's not true. Okay? On the other end of the spectrum, some of us in this gathering here are already even great grandmas and grandpas. And sometimes we think, well, I did my time. You know, I've put in my work. I want you to know neither of those ends of the perspective are finished. You're both important and significant to the work of the kingdom and the mission. And if you know Jesus, he wants to walk with you in such a way that you have opportunity even here and now to believe, to kind of extend this actively walking with him and journeying with him, okay? So this is important. She was a high school student who was working part-time at the optometrist clinic I worked at, which is how we met. She played in a worship band in the church that performed on Sunday evenings. It was called SNL, Sunday Night Live. Then one thing led to another, and I started attending Sunday morning services. My family started to come with me. My kids then would attend the Christian school, and in 2005, I was baptized. I just cannot imagine what my life would be like if I did not have Jesus in my heart and this amazing church family surrounding me. I wanted to share this story with you. It's like an exclamation point on the interview you did with the Woods. One never knows how the ask will impact another person's life, both here and for eternity. It can be scary. It can be intimidating. Moving into this place where we want to actively believe, where we want to journey with Jesus and be focused on his mission and his kingdom. And I understand that. And I'm praying for you in this season. But it's worth it. It's worth it taking the risk. Because you never know how you can be Jesus to that person via something as simple as an invitation. As simple as handing an invite to something like a Christmas Eve service that could start a conversation that will shift their life for eternity. So, faith is not a destination, it's a journey. And if you're here today and that journey's never begun, it's as simple as Jesus, I'm sorry. Jesus, forgive me. My life is yours. And if you know that to be true, remember this. To believe is a verb.